Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Liberty Talk Radio, America's libertarian voice and independent streaming internet radio station. Available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, from our studio in Tulsa, Oklahoma, to around the world. I'm your host, Joe Cristiano, and this is your antidote to popular talk radio. This broadcast is being brought to you live on Friday morning, June 10th, 2011. It is now 6:31 a.m. Central Daylight Time in the good old USA. Folks, it's time for us to take back control of our government now before this bureaucratic, oversized, and self-serving federal government starves us of our property, our freedom, our rights, and our liberty. To do this, we must shed conventional thinking regarding our political structure. We need to be revolutionaries in thought, dissidents in action. Only after we recognize what our government is doing to our freedom and our Constitution will we start taking it back. And this program is just about that. Well, good morning, everyone, and welcome to our program. During our live broadcast, we invite you to call toll-free 888-773-4496. That's 888-773-4496. Otherwise, please send us email to comments@libertytalkradio.com. That's comments@libertytalkradio.com. I also encourage you to get educated on economic issues. Go to Andy Sutton's website, Sutton, SUTTON-associates.net. In his newsletters, Andy discusses economic issues and how they affect you. He has a free newsletter, which is terrific, and then he has an in-depth newsletter, which costs piddles every year, gives you insight, and also makes him available to you on your portfolio and your investments or what you should do. Terrific service, terrific person. I recommend it highly. I do it. You should do it. Liberty Talk Radio is now available via iTunes, also Twitter, and we're considering going on YouTube, although I'm just too self-conscious for that, folks, right now, but we may do that for your listening convenience. Lastly, I would also like to remind our listeners to subscribe to our reminder service by visiting our website and clicking on the subscribe icon. Well, good morning and welcome to our special edition to Liberty Talk Radio. I don't think we've ever broadcasted on a Friday morning, but here we are. I just returned from Kansas City, Missouri. And I cannot take a trip, folks, like normal people do. They go, they visit, they observe, they have lunch, they have supper, they go to the theater, they go to bed at night, they get up the next day, and they do the same thing. I go to an exhibit, I become philosophical. All of a sudden, everything comes to my mind. And I really find it very, very difficult to vacation. In fact, you know, folks, I don't. I really don't vacation. I don't like vacations. I go to keep the peace. I do not go on vacation. But what's interesting is that when I do go, I really learn so much. Not so much about the area, but about America and what we used to be. You know, this used to be a unbelievable country. And the first thing I'd like to talk about a little bit, and there's several subjects, and I'm going to wander a little bit this morning, is we went to an exhibit that I thought was going to be boring, you know. It was called the Steamboat Arabia, the excavation of the Steamboat Arabia. Now, what could be more boring to a guy who likes to ride motorcycle and play the drums to go see an exhibit on the Steamboat Arabia? Folks, I've been down to NASA. In fact, I live down in Houston. I went to NASA a couple of times. I mean, incredible, incredible exhibit they have down there. You know, they have the space station. They have everything up there, you know. This one topped it. I know this sounds crazy. This one actually topped it. There were four guys in this town who decided to excavate the steamboat. They had to find it. They found the area. They found the guy who owned the land. The guy who owned the land says, yeah, I know where it is. He says, people have been trying to get it out, and they've been looking for it. He says, I can tell you exactly where it is. And what happens is the Missouri River changes course constantly. Well, it did back in the old days. I mean, there'd be a heavy rain, and it would move 50 yards, you know, make a curve somewhere. I mean, it totally changed course. It's an amazing river, big river. And it would just totally change course. Well, they since, you know, dredged it and whatever, and they banked it and whatever, and so it stays the same place. So the guy said, well, this is where it is. Go to it. These guys dug a hole the size of a football field with a backhoe. They found it. Everything on that ship was perfectly preserved in the mud. Perfectly preserved. Folks, I mean, if you want to count buttons that were in barrels that were going to be sold, we're talking about millions of items. But if you discount those real small items, like millions of buttons and whatever, there was tens of thousands of items. It was incredible what they excavated. What these guys did out of their own money, they just got enough money, they finally paid off the loan after 10 years. It cost them a million or $1.5 million. If the federal government would have done that, it would have been a $10 billion project. They took it out of their own pockets, they got a loan, and the money, they made money from displaying the displaying the objects of this exhibit. The museum is incredible, incredibly well organized, and it showed you everything that the steamboat was carrying. We're talking about dishes inlaid in gold. Not all of them, but many of them. Tools, you name it, tens of thousands, not tens of but thousands and thousands of pairs of shoes, nails, buttons, women's dresses. I mean, you name it, it was on that boat. They left most of the boat down there because they had no place to store it. No one would take it. And they just took like the hull and the stern and stuff like that, and they brought it back up again, and all the boiler and stuff like that. But the way they organized it, and it showed how people lived back in those days. Those steamboats, now I have a talking point here, believe it or not. Those steamboats were so incredibly dangerous because they were unreliable. Boilers blew up. Pipes broke. People burnt. I mean, people lost their lives. There was a good chance that if you worked on a steamboat, you were going to die. And I thought, you know, when a steamboat went upriver with all of those goods, they kept towns alive for the year. Think about that. There are towns now that no longer existed when that steamboat sunk. Explosion, boil. Oh, no. It hit a tree stump or something like that, made a big hole on the front of the boat, went down in seconds. So heavy. Just went straight down. People hardly had time to jump out. Only people who had time to jump out, people on the top deck. People below, they all died. But that steamboat actually supplied the town that no longer exists today. It stopped existing when the steamboat sunk because people couldn't make it through the wintertime. Now, just think of that. Think of the individual responsibility that people had. People built a steamboat. Now, they didn't want it to blow up. They wanted it to make money. So there was no enticement to make it cheap so it blew up and they didn't care about the people. It blew up. It went down. They lost all their investment. I mean, everyone had skin in this game. There was no government. There were no regulations. We would be living in the Stone Age, folks, if there were government regulations from the very beginning. Yes, people did lose their lives. It was a horrible existence, but that was the only existence available. People took that existence because the alternative was no better. Think about that. When the steamboat went down, many of the towns up the river died. People had to leave. They had no provisions. There was no government subsidies, no FEMA. So people lost their lives. They were gone. That was it. Over with. Think about that. But that's the way America grew. And you see, the goods that were made, all made in America. Mostly made in America. Some were made overseas. Some were made in France. Incredible. If you ever go to Kansas City, look at that exhibit. The steamboat, the excavating of the steamboat Arabia. A remarkable visit. And the person who owned the land, you know, signed an agreement that, of course, they wouldn't take possession of the steamboat and its possessions, whatever. He wound up donating everything. You know, his rights and whatever, he donated it all to the museum. No one made a penny on it. But it was a lifelong endeavor, a passion of these people, for people, and a landowner. And it's a remarkable American story. I mean, it gives me chills. And think if the federal government was involved in something like that today. I mean, the EPA, you name the alphabet soup agency, would be involved. It would never be excavated. Never, not in a million years. And if it was, it would be billions of dollars, bureaucrats making money all over the place at the expense of all the taxpayers. I mean, it is absolutely amazing. Absolutely amazing. When you think of what happens when people are left to their own accord. The reason why they were able to excavate it without government interference is because it was on private land. And it wasn't in the water. And they were left alone. They were very lucky. I'm not sure if they'd be so lucky today. There's got to be a law that says you can't do that today. You know, you can't excavate steamboats without a license or something. And that would kill it. And that would absolutely kill it. I just thought it was remarkable. But to see all of the goods, most of which were made in America, you can see where the former glory of this country was. It was so uplifting. Believe me, it was better than NASA. And if someone would have told me that beforehand, I would have thought the person was nuts. It's a phenomenal exhibit. And yet, these people had that old-fashioned pioneer attitude to get something done. They didn't go to the government, they didn't ask permission or anything. They just got stuff together, got their money together, and they all worked. And they worked. They didn't hire people. They worked. They ran the backhoe. They dug holes. And the thing was, I forgot how deep. I mean, it was a phenomenally deep hole. It wasn't like 10 feet. It was like a couple of hundred feet deep. The hole, this thing, looked like a gigantic crater, like an asteroid hit it. The backhoe, which is a big backhoe with the caterpillar-type wheels on it, you know, that thing looked like a little toy in this hole. It took them years and years and years to excavate all that stuff. Amazing, amazing American story. But we can't have American stories today. The government won't allow us to have American stories today. The steamboat wouldn't exist if it was today. Because there were too many regulations. If someone got killed, they'd stop production and whatever. And I'm not advocating, oh, build something if people die, to hell with them. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that. I'm saying that everyone took a risk. Everyone had skin in the game. Everyone knew what the odds were. And they had an option of to accept it or not accept it. The people who worked on those steamboats were considered suicidal because the odds of making it down the river were so slim. But they did it. But no one forced them to do it. The steamboat captains were in the same shape. I mean, these were the head guys. And yet, they took nearly the same risk as everyone else. The only difference is they were on top deck. They had a chance to jump off before it sunk, a little bit faster than anybody else. And even the steamboat owners risked every dime that they have to get that steamboat down the river, to make certain that that steamboat made it down the river successfully. If it sunk, it was an insurance company saying, well, here, Bob, here's a new boat. They lost it all. Everyone had skin in the game. And the problem with America today is nobody has skin in the game. Oh, it appears such. But if they don't make it, the government sort of bails them out. And there's something very, very, very wrong with that. You see, folks, we don't have individual liberty, individual responsibility, and no one has skin in the game anymore. We cannot. There is no way. There is absolutely no way Americans can return to its former glory. Just hold on for a second for station identification. And I'll be right back.
You're listening to Liberty Talk Radio. Political talk derived from a historical perspective. Not always palatable, but good food for thought. Pure Libertarian Talk with host Joe Cristiano. LibertyTalkRadio.com. You're listening to Liberty Talk Radio.
Folks, this is Joe Cristiano. Welcome to our special broadcast. This is Friday morning, June 10th, 2011. We're talking about America's return to glory. And just my experience going to Kansas City and going to some of the museums that I went to, and then metaphors, if you will, or examples, or give us insight as to where we were as a great nation. I'd love to hear from you. Our toll-free number is 888-773-4496. That's 888-773-4496. Write that number down. Have it by your telephone, your cell phone. Put it in your cell phone and call me. Call me just to say hello if you want to call me. That's fine. You will not be interrupting me or my train of thought. I have no train of thought, okay? So please do call. We'd love to hear from you. If you want to send me an email, send it to comments at libertytalkradio.com. And we'll be here for about another half hour. I'm going to rant for a while. From there, we went to other exhibits and, you know, art museum and all that. Very interesting stuff, you know. This is my wife's vacation. I sort of tag along, you know. Like most husbands do, we tag along, you know. But I truly enjoyed it. I have to admit, I really enjoyed it. Now, folks, we have many open lines here. There's no one here. I know there's a special edition. Probably very few people knew I was broadcasting this morning. But someone's got to be browsing and catching us. Please, if you're listening at all, don't be bashful. Most people are so bashful. They say, oh, I was listening, but I didn't want to call in and interrupt you. I didn't know what to say. Even if you called and said, hey, hello, Joe, this is Bob. That's just fine. And I'm a happy camp. I'll say, how are you, Bob? Thank you for calling. Thank you for listening. At least you give me a break, okay? Thank you very much. 888-773-4496. But the most interesting museum was World War One. They call World War One the war to end all wars. World War One had to be the dumbest war. I mean, it is so incredibly dumb, you can't believe it. I mean, there was nothing smart about it. The way they fought it, you know, the equipment that they had for it, the people who died, the hundreds of thousands or millions of people who died in that war on all sides is absolutely incredible. And the way they died was horrible. But when you think about it, just think about it. It wasn't people that went to war. It was just a handful of monarchs who had alliances with other countries for selfish reasons, aligned themselves and promised that they would align themselves with them should this country attack them. They had entangled alliances that you couldn't figure out. You read the stuff and you cannot draw a flow chart. It doesn't make any sense because the lines cross each other constantly. It's like a closet filled with metal hangers, got all entangled, and you try to take one out. All of them fall off on the floor. And there's no sense, rhyme, or reason. That's World War One. But what's interesting is that all of these monarchs, none of whom went to war, sent all of their population to war, or had the war come to them to kill their population. Just think about it. One person in charge of many. One person, sovereign, everyone else, slave. And what does that sound like to you today? What does it sound like to you? What we have today, we have these people in power. We have a president in power who starts wars. Look at the war in Libya. Now we're bombing Libya. I mean, you know, it's really mission creep. It just keeps on going and going and going. And by the way, I understand, and I haven't verified this yet, that we are now bombing southern Yemen. Now, what the heck are we doing there? You know, that was a covert operation. You know, it's absolutely incredible. We have a few people. We have a monarchy. And they send their people to war. The only thing I have to say about the United States, at least at that time, when we got into World War One, at least Woodrow Wilson received the permission from Congress. But listen to the logic. The Germans were trying to entice Mexico to invade the United States, to take back the southern states that we took from them. Now, this is the insanity of war. First of all, we did take the southern part of the United States from Mexico, militarily. We did. It belonged to Mexico. It was part of Mexico. We took it. If Mexico has a gripe, it's legitimate. If the reverse was true, if that belonged to the United States and Mexico now occupied it, we would have fought them. Let's say, even Stevens got to be reasoned. It's just got to be fair. So they had, that was one of the compelling reasons. Now think back then, Mexico. Mexico could no more afford and it will have the hope of winning a war with the United States that at my age, 68, I can go into one of these fighting rings with these super fighters, and stand a chance of winning. Put me in the ring with a world-class a boxer, a real world-class heavyweight boxer. Put me in there, the condition I'm in, what's the probability I'm going to win? Zero. And you don't think Mexico knew that? And you think the United States knew that? Of course they did. But what do? They use it as an excuse to get into World War I. So the monarchy of the United States can send all of its subjects over there to die. And believe me, they died. The conditions were horrible. I learned that on the lines, where they dug in the trenches, they were just used to throw dead bodies, bones, parts of bodies, excrement, everything. It was just, they were garbage dumps. They said you couldn't stay in those places. They smelled, they were filled with disease and everything. And, when you see pictures of them, they look so neat and everything, and they have everything boarded up and it's garbage. They were garbage dumps. They said it was repulsive, and you couldn't stay in the place. You just jumped in there to get out of the line of fire, and then you got the hell out again. You took your chances in the line of fire rather than stay in a foxhole or a trench. This is how horrible it was. And they died and died and died and died. They just walked into bullets constantly. They had these mortars constantly on them, ripping bodies apart. And no one knows, today, no one really can agree as to what started the whole damn thing. Well, my point is we have the same thing now. We have a monarchy, didn't ask anybody could we go to war, and then makes up some stupid Trump charges. Now, people say, the reason why the Germans were sinking our ships. Yes, they were just sinking our ships. We had an alliance with Germany. During the war, we had an alliance with Germany before we entered the war. But yet we were supplying arms and goods to the enemy of Germany, which was Britain, France, and whatever. So when our ships went over there, we knew if our ships went there, they're U-boats. In World War I, they had U-boats, submarines, and they were sinking ships. Sunk the ships. Ship came by, it got sunk. And we used that as an excuse. And we also used an excuse that they were trying to entice Japan to attack the United States. Now, Japan had absolutely no way of coming across the entire Pacific Ocean to attack the United States. And if they did, they'd have 15 guys. It would never have worked, But they used that as an excuse. Now, all those may have been true, but it was silly in a way, except for the sinking of the ships. But, if you see a fight, crazy people fighting, do you walk in between the two people, crazy people fighting? No. If you got hit, you go, hey, the guy hit me. Well, you jerk, you walked right in the middle of them. That's what we did. We sent our ships right in the middle of the whole damn thing. We knew there was a war going on in Europe. We should have backed off and said, hey, you want the supplies, England? We're more than happy to give it to you. Come over here, pick them up. It should have been very simple. Should not have been our ships. We had no skin in this game at all. They say, Germany would have won. Well, there was a chance Germany would have won. Not for long. Do you think France would have acquiesced to Germany forever? No. You think Russia would have acquiesced to Germany forever? No. And we're very short-sighted, just like we are today. But that was the dumb war. It was, and my point being, my talking point is this, that today we're going to repeat World War One. A war will break out. Like Gerald Celente says, he says, we have now started the Great War, the first Great War of the 21st century. We've started it. And spare me this terrorism crap. I had a conversation with in Kansas City. Oh, by the way, we went to see the Kansas City Royals play the Toronto Blue Jays. The most boring baseball game I've ever been to in my life. Boy, I like to see, you know, the Yankees play the Red Sox. I mean, they're usually an exciting game. Boy, this was, most of the runs were gotten by walks. I mean, it was hard. It went into extra innings. You could have slept through the whole damn thing. It was a horrible game. It was nice being in a ballpark. My wife's never been to a professional ballpark before, Major League Baseball ballpark. And it was nice, but it was not exciting at all. I had a conversation when I was having breakfast one morning with this gentleman who was a Vietnam vet. And, no, I'm sorry, not a Vietnam vet, a vet from Afghanistan. And everything he said is exactly what you hear on TV. You know, we have to fight terrorism. We got to get them before they get us. I mean, he was so indoctrinated. I didn't disagree with it. I just listened. And it was just interesting. Because in at no time did he say, well, what did we do? What could we conceivably have done to motivate those people to hate us the way they do? There's no thought on that. You know? They've always been that way. They're radicals, you know, and they always will be. And if we don't get rid of them, you know, and those radicals are not controlled, he said, I know we'll never control them 100%, but, you know, provided we have a certain amount of control, he says, we'll be relatively safe, you know. Sounded just like somebody on television. Someone selling the wars. I felt sorry for the guy. Didn't disagree with him, didn't argue with him, didn't give him an alternative point of view. I mean, you just can't do that. I mean, I'm not there to get an argument. But it was interesting that here's a guy who's been there, been all over the place, and yet he's still towing that company line. I felt sorry for him. What are you doing, you know? I mean, you don't see the insanity of this whole thing. You know, you can't see. They cannot see the other side. They've been indoctrinated so much, they cannot see the other side of the fence. And it's just like Europe in World War One. Every country only saw their side of the fence. They didn't consider the other side of the fence at all. And this is what's going to get us into another big war. You know, I often think, what would happen if there was another attack on the United States by the terrorist? And I asked the question, 9/11, was that a terrorist attack or was that revenge? And when I've asked that question, people say, what do you mean? I said, was that revenge? He says, for what? I said, I don't know, revenge. I mean, they're doing it for a reason. And they stop and they can't think that far. I mean, they get angry. I said, I'm just asking, is that revenge? Was that revenge? And they cannot go there. They got this belief system that we're right, they're wrong, we have a good religion, they have a bad religion, and that's it. It's incredible. Now, could the United States return to its former glory with that type of attitude? No, folks, it can't. It cannot. You know, we made things here in the United States that were just fabulously made. They're not made here anymore because they're not economically feasible to make here. We made them here because we could afford to. After World War One, the world, for the most part, the industrialized world, the hub of the industrialized world, was totally destroyed. France, Germany, England, Austria, Hungary, all that area, totally, Russia, totally destroyed. So we emerged as a world power because we were untouched. World War II, the same thing. And so we were able to produce anything we wanted to produce at any price, even shoddy, crappy merchandise, and sell it for top dollar because there was no one else. And now people are screaming that they want to return to that former glory and they want to manufacture stuff here. Well, you can't do that because when we were making it, no one else was. Now everyone is making it. They're making it as good, if not better, at a much lower price. But we won't lower our price because we won't lower our cost of doing business. And that includes wages, but everything else. You see what I mean? We will not take the steps necessary to make ourselves competitive. And the only way we can do that is put up tariffs and then all trade stops and we go through a severe depression like we did in the 1930s. Let's take a quick break. I want to just wet my whistle a little bit.
You're listening to Liberty Talk Radio. Political talk derived from a historical perspective. Not always palatable, but good food for thought. Pure libertarian talk with host Joe Cristiano. LibertyTalkRadio.com. You're listening to Liberty Talk Radio.
I'm back, folks. I just had to take a little swig of coffee. Actually, I'm having a little tea this morning. Herbal tea, so I don't have too much caffeine. And so when you think about our glory days, and we used to make stuff here, and we want this manufacturing here, we have to think of in context of the world. We helped destroy the world. Let's face it. We sent our troops there, our cannons and our tanks and bombs and airplanes. We bombed the crap out of places. And we're still doing that today. Only many other places are producing things, and they're producing them cheaper than we can make them. So how do you compete with that? Well, in some cases, you don't compete. You can't compete because what you are making is something that people are willing around the world to make at a lower price, no matter how you do it. Now, can we make things? Yes, we can. Now, let me give you an example. I was at a business meeting, and a person gave a little talk. It was a roundtable discussion, and he says, how is it that, you know, you can buy a $12 shirt, let's say a men's shirt at Walmart, and then you can go to another store and you buy it for $20, and then you go to a higher-end store and you'll find a similar shirt for $50. He says, we can make a $50 shirt here and make money on it. He said, why don't we make them here? And no one had the answer. But I raised my hand, you know, wise guy me. I said, oh, we can make it here and we can make a profit. He said, why don't we? I said, because we don't want to. We don't want to do it because it is too much of a hassle to deal with America, with the American government in business. We also went, by the way, to the Harley plant, the Harley-Davidson plant. Yeah, I love motorcycles, you know. And unfortunately, it was an abbreviated tour because they were changing models and they had, you know, everything was being changed and most of the plant was cut off. But we saw a very small portion of the plant and a very short tour. I'm not disappointed in the tour. The tour, for what they showed us, was very well done. But I've been in those plants a lot because I was in the industrial health testing business and I was in those plants all the time. It was nice, and they did a real fine job, and Harley finally is making a real fine motorcycle, as you know. I don't know why people buy them because they, you know, to me the demographics are gone for that stuff. But people, they do a great sales job, and people still want to buy them. And people, you know, we are manufacturing Harley Davidsons here. You know, we can make something here, and we can make it. And can make it profitable. Now, if you want to buy Harley-Davidson, you will pay through the nose for that. I mean, you can buy a motorcycle that is of equal or better quality for a lot less than a Harley. You know, it could be a Kawasaki is one of my favorite bikes, you know. And yet, a lot less. Even on the aftermarket, they're a lot less. And Harley, you know, because of its name, it got a niche. So we can do it. But here's a key. Harley-Davidson was consolidating plants, and they were upgrading. And the state that they were in, and I'm sorry, I don't recall what state it was highly restrictive. and the unions were so strong it was impossible to get anything done. So they closed that plant down, and they moved to a state that was friendlier towards business. And I don't remember which state that was either, you know. But was, and this was on a side conversation that I had with the tour guide coordinator. And what's interesting is what they were saying. What they were saying is that you have to leave business alone to do business. Now, I'm sure in this other state, people are not being whipped to work or anything like that. But it was so restrictive in the other state, you couldn't get anything done. You had to go through certain tiers of a union negotiation for a change, and you can't run business that way. And I know a lot of people say, well, if it wasn't for that, you know, the union, people would be still. No, it's garbage. You know, things change. They naturally do change. I always commented that, I've always commented that if you don't want to work somewhere because the conditions allow it, don't work there. The free market eventually will clean it out. You know, it's destructive creation, destructive creativity or something they call it. You know, where you come in, you buy, you start something and someone makes it better and you destroy something else. But eventually it will clean out. But now, you know, a good portion of our motorcycles are not made here that we buy. Harley-Davidson does not have over 50% of the market. I think they have 25% of the market, which is very large. No, but they were at one time the world's leading motorcycle manufacturer. And we shouldn't pat ourselves on the back, you know, because most of the other countries were bombed to heck after war, ravaged by war. So as a result, you know, we became the kingpin. The problem with that is that in our mindset is that, well, we did it once, we can do it again. No, we can't. We'd have to destroy the rest of the world. That would be, yeah, we did it once. Now, let's bring this forward to where we are today. Where we are today is a very precarious position. People want the old glory, but they don't want to give up government. And you can't have both things occurring at the same time. The only way to return to old glory, basically, and to make those things that we want to make the way we want to make them, is really to downsize government to what the Constitution intended it to be. It's just there, only there, to protect our rights and our freedoms to do whatever the heck we want, provided we do not infringe upon the equal rights of others. That's our Constitution. That's what it was meant to be. We're not going to be inflicted by monarchs, by religious institutions, by corporations, nothing. But see, we can't go back there. We can't. Unless there is such an incredibly large revolution where government is... The only way I can see us going back to our own glory, folks, I'll be honest with you, is one way. And that is if we break up as a nation. If each state becomes its own nation. Or if we become a confederate of states, confederation of states, where we have a central government that's just there for coordination purposes, where there was no national army going overseas, you know, involving itself in other wars. All right, we have a caller. Good morning.
Top of the morning, Joe. This is Adam in Atlanta. Hope you're doing well today.
Oh, I'm doing fine, Adam. Thank you so much for calling up, calling in. My voice is giving way. I appreciate you very much calling. My voice thanks you also.
It's my pleasure. I just wanted to expand very briefly on your World War One assessment. World War One is a very interesting conflict, and I can tell that you have a personal interest in it. But during World War One, and I don't think many people know this story, especially if they were educated in a government school and didn't grow out of it. But after the U.S. declared war on Germany, the Pope, of all people, actually proposed a peace plan where all the countries would retreat to their pre-1914 borders. It was actually the Germans and the Austrians who accepted the plan immediately. the Russians said they would take it under consideration, but they generally thought it was a good solution.
Okay.
The British and the French rejected it because they saw an opportunity for victory with the United States now in the war. And, of course, our President Wilson rejected the proposal entirely, and he actually deceived the public to justify the war.
That's interesting.
Does this sound familiar?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it doesn't. I didn't know that. I'll be honest with you. I don't dispute it at all. It does not surprise me. It is incredible when people say, you know, and you hear this from people all the time, Adam. They say, well, good thing we were in a war. You know, if we were in that war, you know, we would be speaking German today. And I, no, it would not have happened that way. I think, you know, they take things, they think you change, you take one marble out of a jar and all the other marbles are going to stay in the same place. No, they all move. It doesn't happen that way. And that doesn't surprise me at all. And that's what we should be teaching in our history books. So when the students leave school and Uncle Sam says, oh, we want you to fight in our wars, they go, no, we're not that stupid, you know. We're educated, and that's why our kids are not educated today. They're just indoctrinated, and then they go to war and they die for the banksters, as they say. And the whole thing angers me. The whole situation, the whole paradigm, the way the country is run, the mentality. You know, Adam, I'm finding it very, very difficult to find anything right. People say, oh, you should look at the, you know, bright side. I go, please show me a bright side. And the only bright sides people show me, you know, or try to show me, is La La Land, is voodoo stuff. It makes it's fabricated. It makes no sense. I was speaking to this one fellow, like I said, you know, who was over there, and boy, he just sounded like a politician. And I didn't argue with him. I just said, thank you very much. Nice talking to you. And that was it. And he kept me pinned down for about 20 minutes talking about the war in the United States and Islamic fundamentalism and the radicals and good that we had to do this and 9/11, bada bing, bada bang, bada boom. And he went on and on and on and on and on. And I said, you know, the guy can't see both sides.
Mm-hmm. No. Speaking of politicians, I'm going to please direct you and your listeners to a YouTube video that was recorded with a handheld camcorder by a young person of presidential candidate Michelle Bachmann, the queen of the Tea Party movement, addressing this group of young people at the recent Eagle Forum, which is some type of, it's called the Faith and Freedom Conference, I believe.
Okay.
But if you go to YouTube and put in Michelle Bachmann at the Eagle Forum Collegian Summit, then you'll come up with this video, and it's one of a kind. I mean, this is, it's incredible the things that she says about the U.S. Military might, and how that we've got to get our economy moving again so we can be the number one strongest nation militarily on the face of the earth.
Okay.
As if there were no other good reasons to fix the economy.
Right.
And as if we aren't already the number one military power on earth.
Right.
But this really, it's an open mic moment for Michelle Bachmann.
Okay.
And it's so critical to see these things because you're not going to see them while she's speaking to the mainstream media.
Okay, Adam, I'm going to lose you in about 44 seconds, okay? My bandwidth runs out in 44 seconds. Now 39 seconds.
Okay.
I want to thank you so much for calling in, and I appreciate, believe me, sincerely, your listenership. I really do. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Joe. You're the best.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye now. Well, that was nice for Adam to call. This is the end of today's broadcast. We'd like to thank Grant Shaker's Audiology for their financial support, and we'd like to thank you for listening in. Grant Shaker's Audiology is a family hearing practice at 3227 East 31st Street, Tulsa. They may be reached at area code 918-749-7711. Call them for all your hearing needs. You'll be glad you did. Folks, you can further the cause of liberty by recommending this program to your friends and let us hear from you. Our email address is comments@libertytalkradio.com. Ron Paul has a sign that says, don't steal. The government hates competition. With that, until next time, I'm Joe Cristiano. This is Liberty Talk Radio. Stay well. Stay tuned.